today's highlight. So Arya talked about the four foundations of mindfulness yesterday. Hopefully you remember. And she briefly mentioned a few aspects of the fourth foundation of mindfulness, where there are many different categories and types, groups actually, of experiences. And I'm going to be talking about one of them. She mentioned the mindful states, which are naturally the difficult ones, right? The states of greed, aversion, sleepiness, agitation, and doubt. Remember those five? I'm sure you have had some of them visit you. And so they're not too hard to forget. And one other, actually, group is the group of the Four Noble Truths. And I'd like to speak about some aspects of these Four Noble Truths. This teaching is totally central to the understanding of the deepening and also leading to wisdom, right? We're not mindful just to be present in each moment. We're mindful to actually liberate our minds from unnecessary suffering. We're not going through this whole day sitting and walking just to be present. So there is a very deep understanding and deep aim in terms of liberating the mind from unnecessary suffering. And this is exactly what I'm going to try to speak and address tonight. Now, these Four Noble Truths, they're central because they're present in each and every tradition of the Buddhist teachings. You have them in the Zen tradition, Tibetan, Theravadin. So they're really very clearly stated, which is something which to me is quite an inspiration, because you can trust this teaching to be really reliable in terms of what is suffering, what is pain, and how to liberate ourselves from unnecessary suffering. So the Buddha had this very clear statement where he says, I teach one thing only, there is suffering and the end of suffering. This was his only line, you can say guideline, right? So it's pretty promising to be able to state, I teach the end of suffering. Wow, you know, it's quite an amazing statement. And we want to be happy. And of course, happiness is misunderstood. So where to find it? Of course, we all have an aspiration to be happy. Now the trouble is we look at the wrong place to find it. So the way that we can find it is actually to maybe seek a little more deeply into where we can actually find happiness, and also what is the cause for unhappiness. And this is exactly what this teaching is about. So, Four Noble Truths, and often people ask, why noble? You know, why this word noble? And one of the explanations is noble in the way that they lead to freedom. So they're not just truths like that. They're really kind of noble in the way that they're exposed, if we understand them deeply, meaning by way of experience, the promise is freedom. So again and again, we can read books about these Four Noble Truths. Right? We can hear them tonight. We can really think about them. Not enough. You have to apply the teaching. So this is so helpful to understand when we are wondering about an intensive retreat of 5 days. And when there are moments where we feel probably some despair, hopelessness, what is this about? And you know, just being with 10 breaths, 15 breaths, 16 breaths, and you're saying, oh my gosh, I just can't live and I can't bear. You understand that this wisdom needs to be applied. What does it mean? Put into experience. And this is exactly what we're doing. And actually, the imagery is one of a physician with an illness. We talked about, right, taking the medicine. And in these Four Noble Truths, there is this example, which is given, that the First Noble Truth says, yes, there is pain. There is a sickness. The Second Noble Truth will say, there is a cause. The third will say, there is a medicine, what we're doing, right? And the fourth is, how do we take it? How do we take this medicine? And there are many ways, there's many skillful means, there's many different types of teachings that explain how. Not why, how. This is an important thing, because why, we start thinking, why is it that I'm in pain? Why is it that I feel this way? Right? And so you begin to think. You want to find the cause by way of thinking. So it's how to take the medicine. And then we follow it. So in a very clear way, this First Noble Truth, there is sickness or there is pain. We need to see it. And this is the seeing that we both explained very, I think, clearly, seeing directly into the nature of the mind and body. This is the seeing, seeing clearly what is happening moment by moment. When we see, then the second, there is a cause. What do we understand with the cause? We understand what's the problem. So, like a physician, we'll say, okay, this is a problem. The third noble truth, the freedom, needs to be realized. We realize that there is a possibility of stepping out of that sickness. And the fourth, which is the path, it needs to be cultivated. Exactly like we're doing. In each and every moment, like we did yesterday, like we do today, like we will do tomorrow, and a little bit on Tuesday already. We did more than half of the retreat. You realize this is amazing. It's so much it takes to be here, and then we're here, and then, it goes so fast, it's amazing. So this first truth, the term is dukkha, often not translated in the teachings, because this word dukkha really means so many things. It's the stress, it's the tension, it's the contraction in the heart, it's the discontentment, it's the agitation, it's the restlessness, it's the old age, suffering in our bones, it's the sickness that you may have when you're a child. Right? And you have toothache because the rawness. So it's everything that is, of course, in terms of pain. Right? Now, there's also this extraordinary capacity to notice that when there's contact with the unpleasant, there is pain. Yeah? When there is separation from the pleasant, there is pain. Okay? So it's broader than this. It's when one doesn't get what one wishes, you can say, right? When pain. Okay, so in brief, there are many different aspects. Now, I'm not going to go too much into this because I think that we clearly understand how pain comes about. There's so many different ways, and what I can say is that more than ever in this society where we live at such a frantic pace, We avoid this reality as best we can. We deny it. We run away from ourselves. We do things. We get busy. Or we get completely numb by endless entertainment. That's the virtual world, right? There's no doubt. And since 10 years, there's more and more capacity to numb ourselves out, right? The apathy. And so on the other side, we can sense that as we do this, we fuel a constant need for stimulation. And that's also a kind of pain, where we're so used to intensity that we're grasping and we're craving at intensity, at being overstimulated. And then it happens that we may notice that the more we do this, the more we actually are in this realm of endless cycle, we are at a distance from feeling. Exactly the opposite than what is more or less suggested here. Feel, be. We stop, we pause, we're really trying to find some way that we are not in a way stimulated, and we don't have much stimulation, do we? Maybe the Easter eggs stimulated yourself a little bit. I noticed, I said, these good yogis finish, they don't take sugar, and I'm bringing, and Arya's bringing all this sugar. Well, it's Easter Sunday, so hopefully you made an exception. Or you were very good. So we face this reality in a very abrupt way. It's quite a shift. I mean, whoa. Any person that has a normal life today is going to say, oh, retreat is a shift. But we need to have this incredible hot and cold shift to sense. Because if we did just 1 hour, 2 hours, and then, you know, we'd go ahead with talking with each other, da-da-da, and it would be very nice, very pleasant. I'd know much more of your lives and you'd know more of mine. But the depth to which we really want to sense experience, it wouldn't be there. So there's a purpose to the silence. There's a purpose to the schedule. There's a purpose to the continuity of mindfulness. An invitation to actually investigate so deeply what is happening when I stop. What is happening? And there are many things that you've discovered, actually, that are happening. It's quite fantastic to actually always, as a teacher, to witness. Even if it's difficult, you learn from the difficulties. And so there's an embracement of life. And instead of living so much at a distance, where we're narrowing down the possibilities, and narrowing down means conditioning ourselves, where we can only live, like, you know, in this much space. So, wow, there's something of an openness that is happening. Whether we have intentionally tried to find it or not, it doesn't make any difference. So, the Buddha suggests finding freedom from suffering is not to escape reality, but to meet reality, meeting ourselves. And this is exactly what we don't understand. There's a blindness, and this is not just you and I. There's a human blindness to saying, wow, we want happiness, except we don't know where to find it. We look at the wrong place. And so we think we need to get rid of something to be happy. This is the confusion. This is the absence of wisdom. If I get rid of this, and if I get rid of that, and if I make my life in terms of this, then, of course, everything's going to be fine. Well, no. The Buddha says, why? Because things change. You can fix and you can have it, da da da, but causes and conditions, they change. So naturally, you can't have everything under control. And that's what we sense. So how can we have a balanced, well-grounded way of meeting our life and we can engage with it a little more or much more? What does it mean? We engage with the suffering. I teach one thing and I teach another, which is suffering, the end of suffering. Now, Ajahn Chah, this great master who talked about the chicken in the nest, right? And something eventually happens. He says, there are two kinds of suffering. The first is the suffering that causes more suffering, right? That we repeat over and over and over again. That we're maybe not even aware of, but we repeat it because we're not mindful, we're not present, right? So we just cycle in this loop. And this is exactly what's called, I don't know if you've ever heard the word of samsara, but this is the word where you're endlessly, habitually doing the same things, not noticing, and life gets so boring. You're saying, oh, meaningless this life. Because we're repeating ourselves endlessly in the same loops, right? So this is the first kind. The second is the suffering that comes when we stop running. And it's the way out. So hopefully you can sense this from experience just a little bit, not in each and every moment, but there's no doubt that when we stop the running away, meaning the avoidance, we expand our potential to understand. We expand our potential to embrace, to engage, to receive. That's no small thing. So now there's a teaching, which is, for me, one of the greatest teachings. It's a sutra, which means it's a discourse of the Buddha, and it's called the Salata Sutra, which is very clearly explained. The Buddha once asked a student, if a person is struck by an arrow, is it painful? What does the student reply? Yes. Would you say yes? Yes, probably. The Buddha then asked, if the person is struck by a second arrow, is that even more painful? Would you reply? Two arrows rather than one? Probably, no? Yes. So the student replied, yes, of course it is. The Buddha answers this. In life, we cannot always control the first arrow. Right? This is the pain. First noble truth. Okay? Now, however, he says, the second arrow is our reaction to the first. The second arrow is optional. This is the unnecessary suffering. Okay? So what does this mean? It means that there will be a body pain. There will be some event in your life, right, that is naturally uncomfortable or creating stress. Some, of course, events are more stressful than others, I would say, yeah? But as long as we're alive, we can expect the most beautiful experiences because life is made of beautiful experiences, of joys, plenty of them, and painful experiences. This is just the balance. And as a human being, each and everyone, I think, here in this room will be able to say, have you had beautiful experiences in life? Joys? Of course. Of course. Have you had painful experiences? Yes. Who would be, as a human being, saying, no, I've had only the nice, the joyful. I've never met pain. And you can't say it's always frustrating or painful or horrible. No, it's exactly this extraordinary capacity that we know and we have this fantastic, actually, mindfulness or presence of mind to be able not only to experience it, but to have enough intelligence that we know the difference between the two. Right? We can actually know exactly the difference between what is. So the second arrow, as long as we are alive, we will expect painful experiences. First arrow. Second arrow is the second noble truth. The cause. What is the cause? Stress. Reactivity. This is basically optional. To condemn, to judge, to criticize, hate, deny. All the different types of relationships that we can manifest in terms of what this first arrow may be, whatever it is. So, this is no small thing. It's very significant. Because if there is a painful experience, what we begin to sense in our own experience is how much of the pain is coming from the body experience or the pain, even in an emotion, and how much is coming from resistance. And this we begin to really sense because we're deeply in presence with ourselves. Do we feel it to be unacceptable? Do we begin to hate it? Do we begin to tense around it? Are we ashamed? Are we blaming ourselves for having it? Right? How much we can have this aggrandized self. Of course, it's happening to me. And then I become an angry person. When it's just a moment of anger happening, right? It's an emotion passing. So this is very, very helpful. What happens there is no small thing. What does mindfulness do? Mindfulness enables to be able to be not only present, but there is wisdom in the way that we actually explore with mindfulness. Okay? This mindfulness holds wisdom because mindfulness is always a wholesome factor of mind, which means in itself, as Arya said this morning, in the seeing, one knows. Mindfulness knows the doubt, knows the aversion, knows the anger, knows the fear, knows whatever, knows the maybe burning sensation, right? How is it that in the knowing, there's the rebalancing? You can say there's the freeing. How is it? Because mindfulness is not just simple attention. It's not just simple attention. If we were to have a simple attention, we wouldn't be able to move forward onto freedom. So this mindfulness is not just attention. See, the other day I had a very clear understanding of someone who was very attentive, actually concentrated, I would say even. I dare say he was concentrated. This guy was the neighbor trying with a screwdriver opening the door of my neighbor's apartment. And definitely, he was absolutely concentrated. And I opened the door of my apartment to go out. I look at him, and my look must have been really quite scary. Because I just needed to look, and we have stairs that go down. 2 seconds later, he was out of that spot, right? So probably a thief, right? He was very concentrated, but attention was there. This is not mindfulness. Mindfulness is wholesome, meaning that there is a sense of a quality where there's care, there's kindness, there's ethics, right? So magically, I don't know how it is, but it's extraordinary that this quality of mindfulness holds wisdom within it, which means that when there's true mindfulness, there's no greed, there's no aversion, and there's no delusion in the mind. And it happens just by itself, where you can sense, oh, there's a moment of maybe some difficult mind state, and very clearly, that mindfulness, it's there, you see it, you know it, and whoop, it drops away. It just goes. This is what happens. You don't need to pull anything away, you don't need to get rid of anything, because it just sees, and in the seeing there's the freeing. In the seeing there's the freeing. Every time, and this is in one moment, so you may be caught and very clearly having that second arrow, right? And in the moment where there's true mindfulness, second arrow is no longer there. There's no reactivity. What happens? We allow. There's receptivity. And what happens is that you just don't contract. So the absence of contraction or struggle is in the freedom. We don't need to struggle to get free. This is what we do. But it's exactly the opposite. The absence of struggle is the freedom. So it's much easier than everything that we do. To get out or to reach or to, you know, to change or to shift or to manipulate. But we learn by doing this. We learn. And it's normal. We get trapped. and we get trapped. And then suddenly we're so tired. And when you actually stop trying, this is when it happens. There's a moment of a closed fist and an open hand. So how did I do this? How did it go away? You know? That's exactly when you actually stop fighting. Stop resisting. So it's quite miraculous, right? So this mindfulness in itself doesn't condemn. It's just honestly aware. And I think integrity or honesty is a good, it's a good word, you know? And we're just there. Now, we get very clearly at times reactive. There's no doubt, right? How do we work with reactive? Just today I had reactive. Last time I was here, I was under the shower, and there was no water, and I had shampoo on my head. This was last time. I thought, what do I do now? I mean, of course there's reactivity in the mind, you know? I mean, it's like, oh no, this is great, you know, oh yeah, I need plenty of shampoo, and now what? This time, thank goodness, it happened today. You decide, you go in the shower, very mindful, try, you know, doing things. And I turned on the water, it was lukewarm. And I said, okay, lukewarm's okay. 2 seconds later, freezing. So this is an unpleasant feeling. Okay, so what happens? The mind reacts. And the first thought that came in my mind, it was so interesting. I laughed so hard. If I were finished, I'd be fine. It's true. It's the first. I see you guys in this frozen lake, you know, and it helped me just open up. Like the fins. Right? So you pop up and you really kind of bring it up, and it's great because in that moment it helped me stay in balance. Rather than feed the reactivity, I was mindful again, and I actually took a quick cold shower. But the momentum of the mindfulness helps us see that so clearly. Can you imagine? The thought that popped up in that mind was helpful because I could see it. And of course there was humor, right? And humor helps. If I had not seen the thought and, ooh, the unpleasantness, and gone the other way, there would have been layers of frustration, of stress, of clearly being extremely caught with maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 arrows. So this is exactly how it goes. You have the second, the third, the fourth. So it's not always that easy, right? So reactivity, different types. This is naturally the stress caused by wanting and not wanting. And we've been speaking of this, right? What is happening is that we're so conditioned for comfort that we just want. We want comfort. That's all we want. We want it to be pleasant. And it's not always going to be so. So the understanding is that as much as we want the pleasant and try to get it all the time, we are going to be reactive to the other side of the coin, which is trying to get rid of the unpleasant. You can't have one without the other. They go together. They go together. What happens then is that you feel separated. You feel totally fragmented, right? So it's the syndrome of, on one side I want this, on the other side I don't want this, and so it's the push and pull, right? And we spend an enormous amount of energy into reactivity, into this push and this pull and this push and this pull. How do we understand it? By meeting it. It's part of the process. So if you've been a little bit frustrated today, it's normal. You actually learn from those types of manifestations. They are also completely impermanent. We're never always in that state, thank goodness. So they arise and they pass, right? Now, when we are reactive, we have this state of contraction and tension, and that is suffering. And so the mindfulness will help you to notice, oh, this is happening. How can I stay in balance? How can I actually meet this type of reactivity? And there is gradually a way that we can recognize, allow, and stay interested. This is the process of mindfulness. Actually, mindfulness does that. We recognize. So that's attention, but not enough. There is an allowing, meaning, this is what the experience is. Okay, so I stay connected as best I can, and I actually notice the actual experience, and then there's more interest, and you see, because you're really there, that it's shifting, that there's a release, rather than an escalation of the reactivity. This is not the first arrow. There may still be the pain. You get that, right? There may still be the pain. There may still be maybe sadness or whatever, loneliness or a burn in your back. There may still be that pain, but it's the second arrow. The reactivity, the condemning, the judging, the blaming, the taking it very personally. So there's many ways that we can actually release the tightness contraction in terms of reactivity. And this we learn. When we are in reactivity, we actually don't see clearly, meaning that we are blind. We don't see the way things are. Why? Because there's craving. There's greed on one side, wanting, and there's aversion on the other. And they're pretty much equivalent. Rather, there's greed to get away, or wanting another experience, or the aversion of what is, they're exactly equivalent. Underneath is the blindness. Underneath is the ignorance. And we begin to highlight the ignorance. What is the ignorance? We think there's a way out. That if I manage this in this way, and if I fix, and if I do this and that and that, I'll figure it out, and then I'm out. And this is the thought process. This is the thought process. So we begin to actually also introduce and relate to the thought process. What do the thoughts say? And this is why we spend so much time in thinking rather than in experiencing or feeling. Because we think we're more clever than just staying in connection, right? We think, oh yeah, I'm clever, I went through this, I can work this out, you know, figure it out. And we all know this. If I describe this, definitely I've been through this 100 times, a million times. Thinking is not helping, yet we can notice what is the thought saying. Very helpful. What is the thought saying? The thought, when we are present to the thought, it's not being lost in the content, what the story is saying, but we're actually saying, oh, I'm blaming myself for this, for example, or judging, or I'm ashamed. So there's a way that we can actually sense what is happening in terms of the relationship. And this is no small thing, because in reality, everything comes up due to causes and conditions. They arise, they pass. They arise, they pass. But when we have this grasping and the reactivity, we take it very personally. The I am. This is me. Again, me. And it's exactly what I said. After some time underneath that shower, I said, it's amazing. It must be only me that's under that shower and with cold water. It's just like, wow, why me? Why? And it becomes this little world. And so it's only me who's suffering on this cushion. Look at all the others, you know, they're so calm. They're almost like Nibbana minus one, right? And oh, yes, and I'm here. And everybody says the same thing. And it's great to have group interviews, actually, so you can actually connect with one another and say, oh, wow, yeah, I'm not the only one that's suffering here, you know? Because it's true that we have this sense of clinging, which is suffering, and naturally there's a sense that we take this, it's me. Because on one level, it's happening to me. Conventionally, absolutely. In the actuality of the experience, it's just an arising experience, and it will pass. How many mind states did you have today? Just one? Can you say, me, today I was only angry, from morning to now. You had probably so many mind states, so many thoughts, so many different kinds of feelings. So we contract around a sense of self. We contract around a sense of self. When we contract around a sense of self, we create the separation. There's a fixation, that grasping, and that's the type of craving which we begin to see. The me, the I, the owner of that experience, contracts around it, and then we don't see the rest. We don't see the rest. So through our reactivity, we strengthen the sense of it's me. And it's solidifying, you know, it's like really solid. This is me. And it's a flow of life. So what happens is that when we have this sense of strong me, and me is totally, I mean, it's part of the adventure, right? There's a personality, there's a characteristic, I have, you know, a name, right? Like you do. I have an age. And so this is the construct, me, there's no doubt, right? But we don't need to kind of create a sense of grasping or identification, right? To hold on to this so that it creates a contraction and then it separates us from the flow of life. So we can feel whole. And this is exactly what happens when we have mindfulness. And people say, oh, I felt whole. Right? You're with one breath, you're with one body sensation or just one step, and actually you feel life more and you feel whole. Like, ah, not so fragmented, not so separate. Not so separate from what? From life. And so when there isn't this sense of so much contraction, identification, like, oh, this is me and it's my pain. In actuality, it's just pain. Doesn't need to be your pain, right? Then there's a way that we understand that we don't need the wanting and the me that needs to be gratified all the time. Because this is what happens when we have a very clear, strong sense of me. Why do we do the wanting? Why do we run after all these pleasant things? To gratify the me, okay? Gratify the me. Then why do we separate ourselves from everything that's difficult or unpleasant? To defend the me. To defend. Oh, I need to stay separate here. And yet it creates this very truth is not wisdom, it's blindness. We actually create the separation by defending or gratifying instead of just living with the flow of experiencing. So this is equivalent to not understanding the way life is with all its stories, its sorrows, its pain, and we can receive it, we can receive, we can allow. So there's a way we begin to actually loosen up a little bit. And loosen up a lot in terms of not needing to be so contracted. And this is great. And you've said this, you know. Even if it's a little bit, you've said this. It's so amazing. So this third noble truth speaks about the freedom. Third noble truth is simply the potential for that diminishment of the blindness, the release of the suffering which is added, that second arrow. And we then are able to actually be much more in tune, and mindfulness helps. It's the only way I think that it so helps. And then we're not the victims of our mind. We're not the victims. Meaning that when there is a thought, you can notice, oh, this is just a thought, which says this, you see it clearly, and the thoughts, they just have the power that you give them. In this connection, thought is thought. Thought is thought. And some of you have really, really said this. Wow, I saw this thought, and you need to believe all the thoughts. It's amazing how much power we give to the thoughts. So we really sense that, oh, there's a potential. Wow, I just see. And that the thought is separate from the experience. It's two different moments. So this is the diminishment. and we have more freedom. And so sometimes this is called, I don't know if you've ever heard the word Nibbana, but this is the word for peace, right? And it's often like, you know, you say, okay, the end of the path, a destination, right? Like you create this destination, like heaven, for example, right? It has absolutely nothing to do with the location. It's totally not a location, right? It's just an understanding, a very deep understanding of the unbinding of habits, the unbinding of reactivities, of tensions. And all descriptions will agree on one thing, that it's the end of greed, hatred, and delusion. This is freedom. So any moment that there's true mindfulness and there's no greed, no aversion, no delusion, there's a feeling of freedom. And it's one moment. And you're caught one moment, the next moment, wow, again. Ah, freedom. Right? And so you really begin to sense the way out of suffering. The way out. Which means that that's the path that we're walking on. We follow a very clear direction. And how do we do it? By being very constant, cultivating this balanced mind moment by moment. And actually, one person asked today, how does mindfulness increase the momentum of mindfulness? And I said, there's no secret. Mindfulness increases, the momentum increases by mindfulness, which means you don't need to tighten up, but there is a continuity, there's a caring, a careful attention. This is why there's an invitation to stay in the body, to be really more and more present where we are, because it's so clear that the tendency is to step out of ourselves. As soon as we step out, we're in concepts. So it's not to tighten up and say, oh, I've got to be here. And no, with calm, tranquility. And actually, what's so extraordinary is this quality of presence is our natural state. So one of the questions that I have for you is, what do you do to step out, to be absent? What do we actually do? One of my teachers was very clear in saying, we come back home. We stay home. Or we come home. And it's true, it feels like that. Ah, and from there, you act in the world. You're definitely, it's not about, you know, this passive state and you're in contemplation and you don't act in the world. No, you act, totally. But you act from a place where you have a choice and you have more freedom and you have more spaciousness and you have more tranquility and you have more receptivity, just less reactivity, and you don't maybe have a way that immediately you're on automatic pilot and you react to maybe another person's words, right? You pause and say, oh, okay, I'm taking this in. What's the appropriate response here? There's space, you see? That's what we're actually living, there's space. And it comes more and more naturally as we practice. So, out of delusion or out of ignorance, and wisdom comes by staying at home. So these types of reactivities, it's absolutely normal. And tomorrow morning I'll be talking a little bit more about working with thoughts and emotions, because this is a very important aspect of the practice, right? So there's recognition, there's allowing, there's interest, and the outcome of this is the wisdom is actually explained as non-grasping, non-identification. And the non-identification is that we don't need to take everything personally. The I am is extra, right? There is agitation, there is restlessness, there is doubt. Mindfulness knows it. There's recognition, allowing, interest. And you don't need to own it. How do we own it? With the story. It's the story. It's the story that makes it. This is mine. This is so solid. It will never stop. Whatever it is, it's going to continue. It's what we say that is the difficulty. And often we end up with obsessive thinking. And we obsess with thinking because we try to get rid of the pain, but it doesn't work. So I'll talk about that tomorrow. Okay, so it's normal. It's just a conditional response. And so the work that we're doing here is really trying to move out of those conditional responses. It's human intelligence. This is our capacity as a human, which of course maybe other creatures don't have the capacity to do. So we have a heightened sense of intelligence which allows us to do this. It's great. So Achancha, he likes animals, I tell you. The other night it was chickens, tonight it's a duck. Your practice is like raising a duck. Your duty is to feed it and give it water. If it grows fast or slow, it's the duck's business, not yours. Let it go and just do your own work. Right? So we raise the duck, right? We feed it and give it water. If it grows fast or slow, it's not our business. In my room, there's the bed, and just in front, I see a sign that's written that someone put up. It says, "Be the light that you want to see happen in the world." And I think it's the probably aspiration from Gandhi's, who says, you know, the words, "Be the change you want to see happen in this world." And it's so wonderful that we are in this exploration together, supporting each other. And I would really encourage you, in a very balanced way, but to do the practice with some continuity, because it's so meaningful, and you cannot evaluate if it goes slow, fast. We have no idea. When you evaluate, you're kind of using your thinking mind. What's happening underneath? It's amazing. Amazing. So even if there's frustration or difficulty, and there's a moment of, oh, I can't anymore, it's okay. You take in that thought. You notice, oh, it's just a thought. Maybe a thought of doubt. I can't. You take a breath. You do it gently. And you continue to practice. And even when you're eating or when you're drinking, ah, this is where I am. That you feed the mindfulness. Mindfulness grows with mindfulness. So I'll end with our poem from Mary Oliver. It's called Mindful. Every day I see or hear something that more or less kills me with delight, that leaves me like a needle in the haystack of light. It was what I was born for, to look, to listen, to lose myself inside this soft world, to instruct myself over and over in joy and acclamation. Nor am I talking about the exceptional, the fearful, the dreadful, the very extravagant, but of the ordinary, the common, the very drab, the daily presentations. Oh, good scholar, I say to myself, how can you help but grow wise with such teachings as these? The untrimmable light of the world, the ocean's shine, the prayers that are made out of glass. Beautiful. And it's called Mindful. Let's sit for just a few moments.